Podcast, and welcome back to Retrona, the show where we sequentially study the rise and fall of TNA Impact on Spike TV, taken from late 2005 to late 2015, as we try and chronicle the exact moment it all went wrong for the one-time contender to the WWE. My partner in crime throughout this journey is, as always, Michael Farah. Michael, how are you?
I'm doing alright. You said that this series is essentially about finding where TNA shat the bed and so forth, which is true. I feel like I thought we would have reached what I thought was the peak of TNA, yes. Kind of like by now. And like, while I don't think we're ever gonna get a show that is absolutely amazing from top to bottom, because I just don't think TNA is capable. but I do think the one specific story, and I'll, you know, take a guess at which one it is, I think is probably the best thing we are going to see from TNA.
Yeah, it turns out that with TNA, it seems to be less of a shit the bed once.
Yeah.
And more of a, like, shit the bed, clean it up,
yeah.
Shit the bed some more.
Yeah. It's like a constant problem. It's like there are constant litterings of shit. But, like...
Yeah, it's not one big explosion, it's several TNA explosions.
Yes, exactly.
Because we are today talking about Turning Point 2006, the last pay-per-view of the first full year of Retrona, a milestone, and also a milestone in the main event. But we've got to go through all of the other stuff before we get there. We, you know, some of it's less good. But as always, before we talk about TNA... much like with every other wrestling show, we talk about WWE first, because that's how it works.
We gotta keep people listening somehow.
So, Michael, this show was December 10th, 2006, and I've got a feeling that in the WWE, 2006 December was one to disremember.
Yes! Very, very, very much like that. December 2006 was, oh my god, there's a lot to get through. Alright, so... as you said, December to Dismember was the week before Turning Point. And look, I think we discussed very briefly on last episode of Retrona about how the only good thing on the show was the Hardys versus Eminem opener, which was legitimately good. I think they went like 25 minutes, way longer than... a match between them should go on a standard WWE card, but when there is nothing else on the show, they can go nearly half an hour and it's fine.
Don't disrespect Bill Buchanan like that.
Look, the interesting about it, because the setup for that tag match was the fact that the Hardys put up a challenge to any tag team in the world to answer the challenge, and in WWE, Eminem answer the challenge, but in internet world, the Voodoo Kin Mafia actually accepted the challenge first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did. The fucking Voodoo Kin Mafia.
Because, I know I wanted to see the Hardys versus the Voodoo Kin Mafia.
Can we just touch on the fact that it is the worst branding and worst advertising if you are a wrestling show and you advertise an open challenge and you're like, yeah. You can come from any show, any company, I don't give a shit. See if you do that knowing it's just going to be someone on your roster. Which is a WWE special. Oh, this is an open challenge to anyone. Oh, it's the person you've been feuding with for 5 months. What a shock.
Well, actually, from memory about this, I believe, because Nitro and Melina were on Raw, and Mercury was off, a TV dealing with probably drugs, and
that's wrestling.
And I think he was all still technically on SmackDown, so it was kind of like they were coming together out of nowhere to do like what was a 2006 dream match in the tag division. Which, like, it's weird because no one really talks about Eminem anymore, even though they were pretty damn good for their like,
this was
brief
before
run.
The what was the match where the only thing I remember about it is Joey Mercury getting his face exploded by the seesaw ladder spot.
I was getting to that because that is also this month.
Oh, is that this month?
Yeah, it is this month. But we will get to that in a second. But yes, the main talking point about December to Dismember is the Extreme Elimination Chamber, where every pod had a weapon. And it was... So, the Extreme Elimination Chamber was marketed as CM Punk, Rob Van Dam, Sabu, Test, Lashley, and Big Show, and then during the show they took out Sabu and replaced him with Hardcore Holly.
Woo!
Which
yeah!
is very WWE. And so that's
one of the boys.
So that's not a great start. Because apparently the ECW card was so stacked they actually needed to take out Sabu in order to fit someone like Hardcore Holly on the card. Anyway, the match sucked in multiple ways. CM Punk was eliminated first. The crowd was not happy about that. Then Van Dam was eliminated immediately afterwards. So the two baby faces were eliminated from the card, and all you had left was Lashley, who was receiving kind of the John Cena, Batista kind of push at the time. Anyway, Lashley ends up winning, and then shit hits the ceiling because after the show goes off the air, it's universally panned as one of the worst WWE pay-per-views of all time. And Vince McMahon sends Paul Heyman home. They announced that on WWE.com and they cited slumping television ratings and a disgruntled talent roster as causes for his dismissal.
They reset up ECW like that.
Yeah.
WWE ECW was nothing like ECW except from that statement there.
Yeah.
That is exactly like original ECW.
No, that's exactly it. Paul Heyman was escorted from the building from December to Dismember. He was also immediately pulled from the ECW creative team after that altercation. And so basically Vince was attempting to put the blame on Paul Heyman for the really bad show. And then after a meeting with Vince and Stephanie, Paul Heyman legitimately left and quit WWE.
Mm-hmm.
Heyman was very much against the decision for Lashley to be booked to win the title and instead wanted to have CM Punk win, but Vince did not want Punk to win. CM Punk to win the title there. Tommy Dreamer and Stevie Richards immediately asked for their release after the event. Both of those requests were denied. And then they tried to, despite that horrific performance and him being very much out of shape, they attempted to re-sign the Big Show for $1 million a year at that point. But Big Show really smartly decided to say, nah, I'm going to take some time off. And then he too left WWE that month. So that was December to Dismember.
It's still regarded as one of the worst shows,
I think,
of all time.
I think I tried to sit down probably maybe 2 or so years ago and watched it, and it's just like, and the opening tag was legitimately good, and then oh my god, what happened? Because they just,
it starts high,
yeah,
and it literally dies on its arse. Mm. But I don't actually think the main event as like a isolated match. It's not dreadful. It's just, it's not a main event. And it's a bit,
It reminded me of, you know, now in hindsight, it reminded me of Royal Rumble 2015 booking. in that it was really tone deaf. Is because Vince was set in his ways. He knew what he wanted, and damn it, he was going to do it whether people wanted it or not. And he then learned the hard way. But naturally, in the most Vince way, he passes blame to someone else.
I was going to say, he didn't learn.
No.
Vince does not learn.
He doesn't.
Although, I don't want to shoot on VKM too much, because I'm going to be shooting on a different VKM later.
The other WWE pay-per-view that month was Armageddon. Armageddon had... There are a few things. I remember this show very, very well, because...
Is this the JBL Eddie one?
No, because Eddie's been dead for a year. Because he's
dead, yeah.
Yeah.
JBL Cena?
No. No, I think JBL... I think JBL was doing commentary now by this point for a little bit.
Oh, so he would have been, yeah.
Yeah. So
I forget how early on he... Because the World Heavyweight Champion JBL felt like it went on for ever.
A decade, yes.
Yeah.
But that was well and truly over by this stage. Basically, so there was an Inferno match on this show.
I fucking love Inferno matches.
And that was with Kane and MVP, and MVP was actually set on fire, so Kane finally won an Inferno match, which, you know, good for him. Yeah. Then there was supposed to be just a normal tag team title match between London and Kendrick and William Regal and Dave Taylor, which, you know, I'm sure would have tore the house down.
You know what? That see-through 2020 eyes. Goggles.
Yeah, yeah.
And knowing like that, like, Kendrick and London were great. And knowing, like, the super British style. See, that probably would main event an indie show in 2019.
If NXT UK was around at that point,
yes.
Absolutely.
Doesn't matter that Paul London is not British.
No, no, no.
His surname is London.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly it. And then, like, I mean, Dave Taylor at this point was not great in the ring. He was just, like, just kind of there. But then, as Teddy Long did, he then took a tag team match and doubled it, player. Because he made it a ladder match and then turned it in, then added Eminem and the Hardys to it as well, which then turned into a magnificent ladder match, actually. I was gonna say really good.
London and Kendrick in a ladder match would have been really good.
Really,
Eminem are always
Nitro in a ladder match. Jeff Hardy still where he still can move at this point. Like it's a solid idea, and it's interesting that they made that call live on the show rather than pumping up going the Hardys are going to be in a ladder match on pay per view.
Yeah,
so missed opportunity there. But that's you're right. That is the match where Joe Mercury's face explodes when they do a seesaw ladder spot. And it just turns...
It's great.
It's just unfortunate that Mercury's face was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
That's his fault.
They really zoomed in on the face, and it is absolutely gruesome. It's...
Like, it's proper fuck.
Yeah, like...
It's not slightly cut. It's like... Oh, that's a real ladder then.
Yeah. Okay. that can seriously do damage. He was taken out of the match, and then London and Kendrick, I believe, do retain. But no one remembers that because everyone remembers the injury, and that's what happens sometimes when an injury outshines the match. And then the main event
It's like, do you remember anything about Enzo and Cass versus the Vaudevillains on, was it Fastlane?
I want to say Payback.
Other than Enzo just knocking himself out.
In fairness, the match had only been going for about 2 minutes at that point. So that's a shame. You always forget, like, in that... So we're going to go off topic a bit, I can tell. Because I remember that match as... Because they had New Day live streaming it at ringside on one of their phones.
On the phone.
And then, like, it gets really awkward when, like, Enzo, you know, gets concussed. And, like, you just see Xavier Wood slowly put the phone down.
Yeah.
Disconnect. It's like, ooh, okay, that was good. The main event of the show that no one remembers is Batista and Cena, the two world champs, defeating the King Booker's Court, which is King Booker and Finlay. which, you know,
Jesus
hell
Christ.
Of a main event. Okay, some last minute rumors and so forth that was going around at the time. WWE believed that Lita would sign with TNA, and TNA was very interested in Lita at the time. Lita was not interested in TNA at the time, so nothing happened.
What? She wasn't interested in that stacked women's division of Gail Kim and Serelda?
Yeah, I know.
Oh, Miss Brooks.
And hey, she trained Christy Hemme as well for that WrestleMania match.
So she did.
But, I mean, when you think about it, like, you know, Gail Kim was kind of there, but, like, they basically thought that because of the really low work schedule that TNA was. That's just why Kurt Angle went there, was because of the much lighter schedule, no house shows, that kind of thing. This is the weird one. Do you remember Amy Zidane?
No.
Okay. Amy Zidane was a 2006 Diva contestant who got hired by WWE to be the manager of Jimmy Wang Yang. She was released this month in December of 2006 for a myriad of reasons, and I'm going to go through them all.
Oh, excellent.
Okay, so she clearly had no idea about the wrestling industry at all, who was in it, whatever. She was a model, got hired by John Laurinaitis. Yeah. She insultingly asked Vicky Guerrero how she became a diva when the rest of the women were in shape. she boasted to Layla about how she was a runner-up on the Diva Search and she was already on television while Layla had won the contest and was on the shelf collecting dust. This is all from a Meltzer report at the time.
Big Dave.
She mocked Crystal Marshall's hair extensions at one point backstage.
Crystal Marshall.
Bobby Lashley's wife.
Oh, yes. No wonder.
And Teddy Long wedding thing.
That wedding, yes. I hate her.
And the most egregious one was at a SmackDown taping. Stephanie McMahon went up to Amy Zidane and gave her some pointers for an upcoming segment. Amy then asked Stephanie who she was to give her advice, not realizing that she was Vince McMahon's daughter.
Oh, what? I could just imagine that conversation.
I wish I saw that conversation. Do you think that caused the inferiority complex from Stephanie McMahon that showed that she must be on top of all women? She created women's wrestling, and like, there's that.
No, I just think it's because she did. You know, no wrestling before Steph.
Yeah,
I mean, to be fair, and I'm sure we'll touch on this on the August 10th edition of the NXT Roundtable, which you should check out if you haven't already. It'll come out a couple days before this. I mean, Brandi Rhodes seems to be Stephanie McMahon, but with even less charm and charisma.
I have not been following the Brandi Rhodes saga.
Oh, she basically, AEW are doing some basically like online conference convention-y type thing.
Mm-hmm.
That for £50, you can listen to AEW talk about creating an inclusive women's division.
Cool.
Yeah,
that sounds like fun.
You know, also for £50, you can listen to Jimmy Savile talk about him creating a child protective services, you know, or me talking about healthy eating, you know, all of those for just £50. And also, and typical, like, AEW, like, the Elite and Cody and Brandy, they just did not take the criticism well.
Oh, God, no. They don't know how to take criticism. They are the first people to be like, we're doing all these great things, we're going to do this. But the second they're like, someone calls out, hey, okay, I see what you're trying to do, but, like, here's where you have not been following through on your commitment. It's, like, serious defensive mechanisms. It's very intense. Yeah.
Like, I don't expect them to turn around and go, yeah, it's shit. These women are like, but to be like, yeah, we can be better. It's just, imagine if during a fucking takeover, big big Triple H was sat there on his phone on Twitter, and anytime someone was like, oh, and Uncle Johnny Gargano don't need to have a 45-minute main event every time, he was like, yes, they do. It is art, hyphen, Paul.
Only love HH. but yes, so that is what's happening in December of 2006. An eventful month.
I'm excited for this. I'm excited for the segment next month where you have to try and talk about the first ever Wrestle Kingdom, you know, with all those lovely names.
Yeah, all those lovely Jack. Oh, you think I'm going to try?
my one, like, Wrestle Kingdom one fun fact is that Rosie is on it.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
He was never good.
Roz. No, but now he's dead, so you can't say that.
True.
Also, D'Lo Brown's on it.
Is he? Oh, God.
Yeah.
New Japan was an odd time.
He teamed with Tomko and... Is it Bill Buchanan or just Buchanan? Barry Buchanan, that's the one.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, Bill Buchanan.
God,
yeah.
What an odd show. I do not want to watch
Dave Meltzer must have fucking loved it. But a show that Dave Meltzer has some dodgy ratings on is Turning Point 2006.
Mm.
As we said, TNA's final show of 2006, taking place as always from Orlando, Florida, in the Impact Zone. 30,000 pay-per-view buys, 900 technically non-paying fans in attendance.
Mm-hmm.
And the dark match for this show featured Serotonin in their full form, Maverick Matt, Kazarian, and Havoc. Taking on Lance Hoyts and Ron Killing in a 3-on-2 handicap match. You know, going to put over the new dominant faction, and there's three of them, makes it now Lance Hoyt and Ron Killing's win.
I was going to ask, I'm pretty sure that sounds like Ron Killing's and Lance Hoyt would win that, and yeah, that does sound like that.
Yeah.
Lord.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's why it's a dark match. What we can't see exactly can't hurt us.
Exactly. Just like my depression. Aww. But our first official match of the night is the Paparazzi Championship Series 5-Man Elimination Chamber, the saviour of X Division Wrestling, the highest of high flyers player, Kevin Nash, is here, and he's gonna talk to us through this match that he's put together. We have got Senshi, Alex Shelley, Sonjay Dutt, Austin Starr, and Jay Lethal. Collectively, only two of those haven't been cancelled.
That's right. We were working that out. See if we could work. Yeah. So the only people who haven't been cancelled are
Sonjay Dutt and Alex Shelley.
Okay. Okay, that's not terrible.
Like,
it's not
she's
great,
a dick,
but like, it's
and
not terrible.
Hates masks and is just a bit of a knob.
Austin
Starr
speaks for itself.
Is a bit of a knob, heat mass, and Jay Lethal is an alleged, like, sexual abuser. So, you know.
Look, lots of...
I put a tweet out, like, 6 months ago saying he's the nicest wrestler I've ever met. Can I just stop? Like, I'm attracted to abusers. I'm the equivalent of a 60-year-old blonde white girl.
With daddy issues, yeah. It's like,
yes.
It's, I don't, yeah. You must have this, like, affinity, like, you must see these people and go like, oh, they're really good in ring. I can't see anything else past them, past that. That must be it. Oh, good time.
It's fine. At least Ospreay's done nothing. Fuck! it's fine. I've got Benoit. Fuck!
David Starr,
nope.
Oh, God. Poor David Starr. No, not poor David Starr.
I've got Dominic Guerrero. Dominic Mysterio.
No, Dominic Guerrero. We watched the storyline in 2005. He is Eddie's son.
I'm so fucking hyped for that match.
I'm very intrigued by it, just to see what that is going.
If anyone can give him a good match, it's Seth Rollins. And to be fair, his little sequence at the end of the last show.
Hmm.
I mean, he does sound like his dad. It is terrifying.
It's terrifying, right? But, like, yeah.
He could go booyaka, booyaka, and I'd go, oh, Ray, but, like, 6 foot for some reason.
A tall Ray Mysterio, yeah. I'm interested in what it's going to be like, because I assume it's probably just going to end up being pre-recorded, and they'll have it, and, like, they can edit if need be.
That's a good show.
Yeah, so that'll be right. Now, explain the Kevin Nash championship X Division series, because it sounds convoluted as fuck. And I think that's probably on purpose.
Yeah, it's a 5-man elimination, but basically Nash was trying to continue his process of rebuilding the X Division in his image.
Mm-hmm.
We're basically on our way to... We're doing the process of week-to-week X Division challenges.
Right.
Most famously culminating in the X Factor, or X Division Factor.
Oh, this is kind of like... This is the equivalent of, like, NXT, game show NXT, where they're doing, like, a fucking barrel run kind of thing. Right.
Yeah. And then... That ends up with Jay Lethal doing a Macho Man impression, and then Kevin Nash making him stick with it, which leads to Black Machismo, which weirdly ended up being the best thing that ever happened to Jay Lethal, other than having a really good lawyer.
One thing, in that scenario that I've got to work out is, where does Kevin Nash have the power to force someone do a gimmick? The same way, how did Baron Corbin have the power to force Chad Gable to change his name?
Yeah. He's tall. Works for both.
He does work for both. Yeah, he is bigger than
these
other
person.
These
men are measly short kings. Like, come on. But I watched this match maybe a week ago, so it's slightly rusty in my head, but... Sonjay Dutt, I remember doing lots of impressive Sonjay Dutt things, just being fast and flippy and actually mobile, which is nice. The Austin Starr gimmick, that can fuck off.
I don't know what it is.
I think because at this point he's doing Ring of Honor, he's on TV on two different channels.
Right.
And therefore he's basically a movie star, and therefore he's from Planet Hollywood. I don't know.
Okay.
It's shit.
Yeah, I don't get that. The only thing I was really paying attention to in this match was the dissension between Shelley and Star, who are like vying for the love and affection of Kevin Nash. Shelly gets eliminated.
It's the height.
Yeah, it's the height. Size does matter.
Exactly.
So Shelly gets eliminated early on, and then it gets. Then David Starr, god damn it.
Then David Starr asks for a wet leg. You bring down you and a couple of those slutty friends of yours.
Can we not impersonate?
Wet leg. Wait, I got the mustache now.
There we go, great. And then when Austin Starr is left with Senshi, I believe, Shelley basically costs Starr the match, and they're kind of still fighting over Kevin Nash. And I don't know what's going on, and I'm sure week-to-week television would help, but we are not watching Impact week-to-week. Fuck me.
Yeah, no, I'm good, thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm sure, like...
Starr was up for the 450.
Yeah.
Shelley distracts him.
Yeah, so I'm sure that, like, the weekly television would help us understand a bit more what is going on. But Kevin Nash is still a delight on commentary. I do love that.
Yes.
So he can keep doing that. And Senshi wins again, and I'm looking forward to when Senshi leaves again.
Yeah, me too. I know that basically this leads to a final resolution, so the next pay-per-view. Coincidentally, the paparazzi tournament final is Shelley versus Starr.
Oh, okay, nice.
And I think, if memory serves well, it gets a decent time, like it's a match as opposed to like a funny segment.
Yeah.
So hopefully that's good.
I also
remember Final Resolution 07 being good. So that's nice.
Yeah, I think I have memories of Final Resolution being okay, except for one egregious segment that we'll get to next week.
oh, is that next?
That's
one?
Next month. Jeez. And then I think also from memory, I believe Austin Starr gets suspended / fired at least before midway through next year. So I've only got a few more episodes thankfully, from memory, which is going to be helpful. And then we don't have to look at him for another couple of years.
Speaking of things that we don't want to have to look at for another couple of years.
Hey! Nice segue.
Up next is a bikini contest. Yeah, all those horny incels at home, get ready. Whoa, featuring Eric Young, taking on Miss Brooks. Tits. Tits and penis. Ha ha ha, penis. I have notes. Give me a sec.
You wrote notes for this, okay?
Young, basically Bobby Roode and Eric Young are feuding. Mm-hmm. Bobby Roode has basically told Eric Young that if he loses a match, he'll be fired, despite the fact Roode doesn't have that power, and they keep trying to tell Eric Young that Roode does not have this power.
I think also what they're trying to do, I think because Roode is now a businessman. His business gimmick is now a thing. And he wants to,
the gimmick he will have for the rest of his career. Yes.
No. He's not a business anymore. He's just glorious. One thing I got from the commentary, because I try to listen to the commentary because we're not watching the weekly TV. I'm trying to listen to the commentary to try and work out the stories that have been told. So the one thing I've got from this is that Roode is trying to get Eric Young in within his corporation to capitalize on Eric Young's enormous popularity so then he can be popular as well. Very politician-esque.
We already have one VKM. We don't need another.
Yeah, but like, I think that's the story. I think that's why Bobby's so obsessed with Eric Young, because he's so popular.
He's annoyed that Eric Young is getting cheered.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, don't worry, Bobby, in like 10 years you'll both be in NXT and neither of you will get cheered, so it's fine. The stuff that, just to cut to present day, Eric Young, obviously, since Slammiversary, has been back in Impact. Yep. He's been really good. Like, this world-class maniac thing he's doing is... It's really well done. Rich Swann basically did this really heartfelt retirement speech because of the injuries from Eric Young, and then Eric Young attacked him again. So it's nice that on both of the programming in TNA, right now present and right now past, he's good, because I like Eric Young. And his weird, warty voice.
He's quite the different, like, you see him go through different, completely different characters over the time period. Because, like,
I wonder how the tattoos appear. Like, I wonder when that is.
We will soon find out.
Because he's a twink here.
Yes. Yeah.
And he is not a twink now.
No. Well, funnily enough, twinks age over time. Has been 14 or 13 years since this time.
Yeah, but he's not transitioned from, like, a twink to another aspect. He's transitioned from twink to homophobe. Like, I'm not saying that Eric Young is homophobic. No. He looks it.
He definitely looks like a forgotten son. You're right, yes.
Are they homophobic? Probably. Probably. A bit like Marty Jannetty.
Oh my god.
We'll leave that for an NXT roundtable. That's the title name. Making a man disappear inside you. Eric Young tries to, like, be clever, and his bikini is a t-shirt with a bikini on it. The sort of thing your dad has is like a cooking
apron. It's one of the tacky shirts you get from a Las Vegas gift shop.
Yes. Oh, you've not won. You've lost £10 million, but here's a t-shirt. Roode demands that he's disqualified because he's not doing it, and then Eric Young removes the shirt, and he's wearing SpongeBob SquarePants boxers. And then he says that's still not a bikini. So then Eric Young takes it off and is just naked, and it's his cock. And it's not. It's a SpongeBob thong. And then Young wins
because of popularity. Because,
to be fair, I do appreciate the Impact crowd were clearly Impact fans, because otherwise they would have just cheered the big boobed women.
Exactly. I also expected, I don't know why, I expected Tracy's bikini to be kind of like more revealing.
Tackier.
But like, yeah, I guess because, like, she's supposed to be businesswoman and stuff, it was supposed to be, like, a classy bikini or something. So I think that must be what they were going for.
And also,
because it's not TV, Orlando? It's pay-per-view.
Oh yeah, true.
So
yeah,
they could have. So they could have done. That's why, like, WWF back in the day were able to get away with like the handprints on Sable's tits, was because they were on pay per view, and why Jacqueline was able to get her actual tits out on the UK show as well. So pay per view means you can get away with a lot more, and I'm surprised that they didn't with Tracy, but. We saw a lot more skin from something else later in the show, but we'll get to that as well. Why were there two men in bikinis on this show, anyway?
There was only one man in a bikini, let's be honest. So, Eric Young wins. Rude threatened Brooks to get Eric Young to join the brand or she's fired. Rude thinks he can get people fired, and Jim Cornette's in management, so I would believe him, but all these people are white, so they're probably fine.
I also, again, the flow chart would be nice about the hierarchy and who has what power in TNA.
Well, up next is the X Division match with special guest ref Jerry Lynn, who has power over the X Division, I think.
Yeah, because he's a TNA official at this point. Yeah.
Chris Daniels versus Chris Sabin.
Battle of the Chrises.
We covered the flow chart of how we got here, and it's basically Sabin loses to Styles, who loses a three-way and drops a belt to Daniels. Now we've got last week's show where it was Daniels, or last month's pay-per-view, Daniels and Sabin. Sabin loses. He assaults Daniels afterwards. Now we have a special guest here to make sure it doesn't happen. Then the match is solid.
Yeah.
Lots of good X Division stuff. Chris Daniels at this point is fantastic, and Chris Sabin continues to go from strength to strength. I forget that Chris Sabin had this heel run because he's been face for like the largest majority of his career. But it's interesting to see him play the cocky teen who's just been told he's good a bit too much. I think it suits him. At the end of the match, Lynn grabs the mic, demands both men shake's hand. Daniels, however, stated they didn't need to. And then when Jerry Lynn confronts Daniels, he slaps him. So it looks like we're setting up for a triple threat at Final Resolution.
Yeah, it does seem like Jerry Lynn is coming back to the in-ring side of things, which I don't have memory of. I don't have memory of Jerry Lynn wrestling in 2007. That's a portion that has been erased from my memory. But we will probably see it in the not too distant future. It's standard X Division match. There's not much in terms of story in the ring, because like Jerry Lynn is a very like straight down the line like referee. He doesn't show favoritism one way or another, so there's not much going on there. Chris Daniels basically doesn't want to shake his hand because he doesn't have to take part in Jerry Lynn's like learning experiment with Chris Sabin.
I like the layers to this story. It's good. Like, Chris Sabin is Jerry Lynn sees himself in Chris Sabin, not like that. And he's like, oh, I want to help you get better, and you need to stop acting like this because it doesn't get you anywhere. And Chris Daniels is like, nah, he was a dick to me. I'm not trying to make him better. I don't fucking want more competition. Fuck off.
Yeah.
I have no memory of Jerry Lynn past 2004. I really hope he's at least good in this. And I have faith that he would be.
Yeah.
I really like Jerry Lynn. Proper old school light heavyweight. Love to see it.
Yeah, I don't remember him ever having a ton of personality, but I...
Nah, it was never really about that.
Yeah.
Which is probably why I like him, because I'm a very much in-ring guy. And apparently rapist enthusiast. So, that's a fucking sentence. I am a rape enthusiast.
A connoisseur in the raping industry.
Never mind the chicken connoisseur. I'm all about that force. The finish after this match, it's time for the weekly Rhino promo on this show. Friends stabbing back AJ, gore 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 Rhino,
I'm round.
It would feel weird. I'm a barrel. It would feel weird. I grew up on Detroit's hardest area. My wife and kids left me.
I broke a pot plant and got fired. like that kind of thing. So weird that that was like canon. So
yeah.
AJ basically attacks him. AJ like attacks him in the interview and like knocks down the camera and all that sort of stuff. And this is where we get the brawly through the crowd match because oh my god, it's becoming a real pattern. There is always one.
This one was good though. I really liked this match.
I thought Rhino looked right. God. AJ can work wonders in that he can bring out good, especially at this point in his career where he's still quite young. He's still twink AJ. And he is just... Rhino, like, I could see that there was almost, like, a sense of urgency in the match as well. Like, see, doing the stuff on the outside and, like, the springboards throwing the barricade into, like, into a belly-to-belly suplex on the outside. And it looked like... they were going at a decent pace, and for Rhino to go at a decent pace in 2006 is a feat.
Yeah, I like that. This felt like both men were trying to win and hated each other. Mm-hmm. It felt like a fight, and also AJ just bumps better than anyone else. Mm. Like the way that he takes the spill to the outside.
Yeah.
And then we get the storyline where it's like, oh, my knee, oh, and he plays the crowd so well, they start chanting, thank you, AJ, and, like, chanting for him, Rhino's looking terrified. And then as they go to award the win to Rhino, he sneaks in, gets the roll up, proper little sneaky little bitch win. Meltzer gave this 2 stars. Now, I don't think by any means it was like a fucking 4-star, 5-star classic, but in terms of story and what they did in them, it's at least 3.5, Dave. Come on.
I would have given it three. It was solid enough. AJ suffered the same wardrobe malfunction that he did in that TLC match with Ambrose, where there's a big old hole in the back of his tights. But like, I don't think I've seen AJ Styles take a gore yet, and I'm looking forward to seeing how he will sell that.
Yeah, I think, you know, the moose spear where like the person basically does like a shooting star.
Yeah.
As he gets hit, I'm hoping it's something like that because that feels like something that he could do, you know.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed it. I thought it perfectly. It told the story perfectly and over a short period of time, and I assume we're now going to have some stipulation match at Final Resolution.
Yeah, exactly. The story that they were trying to tell was told confidently, and in TNA, that is sometimes what all you need at this point in order to get a pass.
Yeah, sometimes the standards we have are quite low. Follow match. Right, it's time for a race war. Woo! Oh, yeah, America.
Yeah. Woo! Okay. Yeah, the race war. Or should I say, sorry, capture the flag.
it's a continuation of the LAX versus America. And the reason I see the LAX versus America is because TNA build this as America versus Mexico. Mm-hmm. But, you know LAX? You know, Homicide, Hernandez, Conan?
Yeah.
I mean, not one of them's from Mexico.
Puerto Rico, isn't it?
No, so Hernandez is from Texas, America.
Yeah.
Homicide is from Brooklyn, America.
Yeah.
And Conan is from Cuba.
Oh, okay.
There's... Like, sure, maybe some of their family's from there, or, like, they're of Mexican descent, but, like, I ate an enchilada once, so I'm... like, my stomach's now of Mexican descent. What? Doesn't mean I want to hear the fucking Mexican national anthem.
What would have been great is if they were all from New Mexico.
Oh...
which I but it's missed, okay. missed opportunities. Should have hired people who were born in New Mexico.
It's okay, because America's Most Wanted and the Canadian Gail Kim are here to save us with the American national. And oh, and Petey Williams,
the Canadian. Canadian.
Oh, but this match was really good. I thought they avoided the stipulation, which was clever. They went for the flags like once each and then used it at the finish. And other than that, just had a hard-hitting match. I really liked it. Gail Kim. With a big old moonsault to the outside. Mm. Big old, like...
drop kick.
She did the top rope drop kick, but she did it a bit like Sami Zayn, when he does like his falling drop kick, where he pushes himself up. The way that you basically take a back bump rather than like a side bump.
Mm-hmm.
We had, obviously, the border toss previously, where she made it look the best it's ever looked. Mm-hmm. Conan gets involved, Pete Williams gets involved, proper overbooked like America match.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed it, and I thought there was a nice little touch of LAX winning and Conan going, look, for once the non-American teams won a flag match.
Yeah.
That's gotta be a first ever. And I was like,
that's a good point.
Yeah, this isn't very TNA to have let them win this, actually.
Yeah, because I mean, it's not the first flag match this year, which is a problem.
No.
Yeah, like...
it's the best flag match this
year. Oh my
year.
God, by a long way. But it was... it's the second one involving LAX.
Yeah, they really like flags.
Yeah, they really like flags. It's almost like they're telling the same story. So, yeah, it was a capture the flag ladder match. So they combined two stipulations into one. And I sent you a message going like, so what? Like, why can't things ever be normal in TNA? Why can't they just have a normal match, like a normal stipulation match? Why can't it be just a ladder match? Why can't it just be whatever? It has to be two things. And you said it's a good match, so I stuck with it. And it was very good, like very impressed. There were lots of impressive spots, like Hernandez flying around and Gail Kim getting involved.
Oh, Hernandez. Mm. Whew.
Like,
for a big man.
Like James Storm, I think it was James Storm or Chris Harris, they're very interchangeable at this point. Doing like the sunset flip spot off the ladder as well on Hernandez, like
to Hernandez.
Like that is for big guys doing that, that's very impressive. Gail Kim getting involved. She should wrestle. Conan getting involved. What I did actually like in this, actually, was Gail Kim was getting involved left, right, and center. And then right when she was about to get, I think it was probably Homicide or something, on the top rope, and like they grab her and they're about to do something, the commentators were like, well, she has been getting involved, so they kind of have to take care of Gail Kim, which was good because she got herself involved in the match, and if she's going to get involved in the match, then she's putting herself in that situation.
They pointed her out as a threat as well, which legitimizes the stuff she's doing. There was one bit, however, where Conan just kind of grabbed her hair, and then she was like, "Ah," and went away. But like, to be fair, long hair probably hurt.
Oh yeah, pulling hair hurts.
But unless it's in the bedroom, then it's fine.
No, then as they say, there's a fine line between pleasure and pain.
Yeah, there's a fine line between sex and domestic abuse, Jordan Devil. LAX win. And what I really enjoyed as well was them going, Mike, today, Don West, you've been hiding behind that booth all month talking about this. We won fair and square. You better stand for our national anthem. And they did.
Yeah.
And Mike Tenay goes, I may not like them. I may not respect them. I may not respect what they stand for. But out of respect for the people of Mexico, I will start. And then the three non-Mexicans who couldn't really care just kind of stood like...
It was a very a very awkward minute and a half of the national anthem. It was just that's why, like, it's a weird thing that, like, the winner got, like, won their national anthem to be played, because then it just always leads to an awkward minute and a half of just standing around.
Remember last time they just cut?
Oh, yeah, they cut. They didn't even do it. And it was for their own national anthem. I feel like, before we move on to the next segment, there is another segment that we that happened that we have completely skipped over, probably for good reason. It was that baseball thing that happened.
Oh, that one, yeah. I forgot that was a thing.
They brought back that Dale Torborg and whoever the fuck from last...
AJ Polish name.
That, yeah, that...
AJ Brzezinski?
That sounds right, actually. I think you got it right. From last year, they had a match and got involved and so forth. And then another baseball guy was plugging a book and Jim Cornette was doing his best to not let the crowd chant. This Give is wrestling fuck. Over it. We want wrestling over it. And then... The two of the four celebrities turn heel for some reason. So the guy plugging the book said, like, my favorite wrestler is Lance Hoyt.
Lance Hoyt.
Like, that is such an odd thing to say. And then when they start, like, getting beaten up by the other two sports people,
Lance Hoyt comes out.
I don't know what this is, why this is.
And Lance Hoyt tries to be like, this is TNA! And the two baseball guys are kind of pushing him out of the frame so that they can get more in it. And
I don't understand what was going on. I don't know if we get more of it next month. I probably. They were making lots of references for that year. That year in baseball or something. It was just there, and it was weird to watch four invited celebrities and two of them turn heel.
It reminded me of Jon Stewart.
Mm.
You know when Jon Stewart, for some reason, turned heel because that's what everyone wants from a celebrity cameo, a heel turn?
I popped so hard for Jon Stewart turning heel, I don't know why.
It's so weird.
It was so weird, but I believe
he was like an actual wrestling fan. He is, right?
He'd been attending shows for years.
Yeah, it's like Stephen Amell and David Arquette.
Yeah.
Slightly less overbooked than Arquette.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, we literally on NXT this week had a sports person turn heel. Like, it's...
Oh, yes!
So, it's all kind of repeating itself. Different sport, but, like, it's, like, seeing the parallels of what they're doing is very, very odd. But, like, this one was just so out of nowhere and really just was just... did not fit on this show at all.
No.
But... the other segment that happened on the show.
Right, let's talk about it then.
Go for it.
Let's talk.
Recap it.
Right, so earlier in the show, we see Vince McMahon talking to an interviewer, and he's like, oh, I'm busy, don't you talk to me, oh, you're fired. And, you know, it's I could have taken that, okay? I could have taken that. My heart was able to survive
that. He was carrying a cage with a chicken saying, because he loves cocks and so forth, did you not see the skit on TV, that sort of thing.
Yeah, because ha-ha, ha-ha gay, ha-ha-ha penis, ha-ha-ha, ha-ha, ha-ha help me. but as well as that... as I press confirm on this thing I was just buying.
Why are you buying things while we're trying to do a podcast right now?
There was a flash sale.
Okay.
And your man loves a bargain. So, the Voodoo Kin Mafia theme plays with that weird...
Help me, they're in my house!
Yeah, like... I don't know how they got David Starr's call, but okay.
See now. I listened to VKM's music, and now because it's getting me screaming like, "Help me! They're on my screen."
Help me! They're still employed.
Yeah.
And they come out in, to be fair, some well done prosthetics.
They looked like from afar. Like I'm not gonna say that they looked like Triple H and Shawn Michaels, but like. They did a good job in the makeup department and the props department of like having the giant cross that Shawn Michaels was wearing and the hair, and like they tried to replicate Triple H's facial hair and the nose and stuff. So like looks wise and appearance wise, as far as like if we were giving them marks solely based on their outfits and the makeup, then they do get a thumbs up, and that is where the compliments end for this segment.
The props department get a thumbs up. I mean, I didn't realize Triple H had a large nose until this whole started happening. You know, turns out he has a big nose. But basically, it's the Voodoo King Mafia cosplaying as, I went to see Triple H and Shawn Michaels. No, Paul Levesque and Michael Hickenbottom. Pew, pew.
Shoot me, brother. Pew, 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 pew.
And they start doing this imitation thing, and then a rip-off of the Spirit Squad comes off, but they're in red.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yes, yep, sorry. Yeah, you're right.
But throughout this whole time, the commentary's like, oh, they look full of spirit. Don't they usually wear green? Ha, ha, ha. Other show that you watch. Ha, ha. And then they beat them up, and there's one left, and Michael Higginbottom, I went to do air quotes and realized that this is a podcast. It's a video,
yeah, this is the first Retrona that we're doing with the cameras on so we can see each other. So that's why sometimes if you go for air quotes and realize, oh wait, audio medium.
Yes. And he's like, no, I've got a better idea. Bring out the big fat oily guy.
Yeah.
I had Chelsea in the same room while I'm sat on a fucking big ass TV watching a fat man in a thong come out to the ring. To be fair, the one thing that did make me chuckle is he does a shit super kick, and then I think BJ James goes, I think you killed him with that one. That was funny. And then they tried to go from this comedy to like a shoot promo where they're like, you need to tell the difference between parody and reality TV. This right here is a parody, but this right here is reality TV. It would have sounded better if they just said reality, to be fair.
Yeah.
And then basically do this big promo about the fact that, you know, they're getting sued for their imitation of Sean and Paul. Quick Google search shows that they weren't.
Ah!
And then they basically created drama for their work.
Right. And
then they talk about, like, oh, you're saying that we're being unruly and, you know, we shouldn't be shooting on competition, but remember when you sent us on that weapon from the Iranians is how you say it. Iranians is how they said it. We should really check how you got that. The Iranians.
Which is...
to go and
now, and now they're in a deal, and fight. Now they're in a deal with Saudi Arabia.
Woo! Remember when you made me go and find Big Ted? And then they tried to challenge, basically they challenged DX to a match.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure will happen.
Yeah.
And basically say you're a pussy if you don't, because haha, vaginas.
This, they do the whole $1 million challenge thing, and they say it doesn't matter if it's in your house or in our house or in whatever, just accept the challenge kind of deal, in a very much exactly the same sort of thing that Eric Bischoff did to Vince back in the day in WCW as well.
Mm-hmm.
So only on a far cheaper scale. The thing is, the crowd weren't shitting on it, which is annoying.
No, this is what I don't like, is it will continue to get used because the crowd are eating it up. And we still see it to this day where it's like you can get a pop on an AEW segment by going, NXT, am I right? The demos, dab, 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 dab. and by bringing back Bischoff for reasons. But...
The show was... The segment was... The total shift from the comedy to the serious, I could see what they were trying to do, because they've been goofy and stuff. I'm sure they've been goofy and shit on Impact on the TV and so forth. So then to be, to then go into the live, the full-on, I don't know where I'm going with this, to go on to the full-on shoot promo and be serious and so forth. It's like, I can see what they were trying to do, but it's just, with 2020 eyes, it's very cringeworthy. Like, it's...
Yeah, 100%.
It's difficult to watch. And I'm sure as a 13, 14-year-old watching this, I could have been seeing it as like, and I guess with the timing of, because WWE had just put on the worst pay-per-view of all time the week before. Mm-hmm. So to the fourth.
No references to it.
No.
Weirdly.
Which is weird. Would you think a time to call that out and the time to make fun of them would be on doing that rather than making fun of something that's happening on Raw, where at that point still about 4.5 million people were watching at the time. Where have they all gone?
Rugby or some shit like that, I guess.
It's painful, and I think they lead up to the challenge, and I think the challenge is scheduled for the next pay per view, like the Final Resolution show.
Yeah, which I'm going to assume, because, you know, knowing what happens, that match doesn't happen.
No, it does not.
I wonder if they will just fight a parody of them, or if they'll just not mention it.
I'm sure they'll claim victory because of them not answering the challenge.
Yes,
because
they didn't answer.
Yeah.
But, yeah. That was a thing that happened. I hope it never happens again.
Will.
And if it does, I would like to commit suicide before having to watch it. But it's our semi-main event. It is the three-way dance, or un three-way dance, for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. The reigning champion, the Monster Abyss, with Father James Mitchell, takes on the Icon Sting and the leader of the New Nation. That's a completely different person. What the fuck? Who the leader of the New Nation? I reckon.
Are you trying to say the Christian Coalition?
Yeah, the leader of the New Nation, George Washington.
What are you doing?
Abyss versus Sting versus George Washington.
Yes, that's totally what happened.
No, it's Christian with his new version of "That's Just How I Roll." What was it? Caging in or something like that? You can't contain me.
Something
bad. With his prison bitch. And by that I mean the human equivalent of that episode of Family Guy where Meg goes to prison and comes back covered in Tyson Tomko tattoos.
Oh, yeah. Tomko's here. I didn't realise we got Tomko this soon. I thought it was going to be at least another month.
Yes. He's also doing Japan at this point, which is strange. Mm. It goes about 12 minutes. It's an interesting match. It's two heels and Sting. Abyss, who won the title by DQ, wins again. Somewhat not really clean.
So odd because the story is like they're doing like that. Abyss has a secret that Tomko knows from before or something like that, and
they call him Charles?
Chris.
Or some Chris.
Because it's Abyss's name.
Knowing what we know. Yeah, but we know that it's Joseph Parks with her 20/20 eyes.
True. So they're doing that, so there's a secret, and like James Mitchell is still trying to control Abyss. Sting's trying to get Abyss to see the light.
His name's Christopher Joseph Parks. Okay, that makes sense.
Got you. And through all of that, it's that, like, I appreciate them trying to put story into a match. I will give them credit for that. But there was a lot going on that was, and it's hard when you are doing a story, but you can't tell the details of the story. So it's all just lots of alluding to's and references to, but you're not actually saying what the story is. So that can be really difficult to do. And it's then the match suffered because of that, because Sting's trying to talk to Abyss throughout the match, and James Mitchell's trying to control Abyss, and like, it all just is a mess, and he like has the tacks out and everything, and in a weird, very clunky finish, he gets Sting in a black hole slam, and Christian gets out the way somehow. I don't know if he was meant to miss the thumbtacks, or if he accidentally missed the thumbtacks, but the black hole slam looked bad. And yeah. Abyss ended up winning. So, you know, credit to it. He defended his title and got the win. That's something for Abyss.
Yeah, I mean, he loses it to Christian next month. I know that for a fact.
Yeah,
so.
Look, it's... Yeah, it's a shame. And poor Abyss, his entire title reign never hit the main event because something much better was in it.
So much better. Now, with my new iPhone 11 very nearby, let's talk about our main event. It's the rematch between the newest, hottest acquisition, Kurt Angle, and the formerly undefeated Samoan submission machine, Samoa Joe. Last month, Kurt Angle's debut, this match happened. Samoa Joe tapped out, which the crowd likes to remind him. And here we have the rematch. Samoa Joe basically appeals to Kurt Angle's competitive side and says, "You owe me a rematch," and Kurt agrees. And then a 20-minute, beautifully pieced story, we get a double turn.
Yeah.
Like a Stone Cold Bret Hart style double turn where it's competitive back and forth. Like, it feels seeing it, but like really good in ring. Lots of really good wrestling. And they're going back and forth, ankle locks, Germans, big strikes, big chops, Samoa Joe's little kicks to the corner, Kurt Angle's Germans, belly to bellies. And then the ref gets knocked down and Samoa Joe gets the win, but the ref doesn't see it. And at this point I'm like, well, they've given the heel the visual win. That's an interesting way to do it, but it makes sense, you know, help Kurt Angle win, but not affect Joe. And then in a run of events that I still generally forgot.
I didn't remember this.
Yeah. Kurt Angle boots Samoa Joe in the balls.
Good low blow. Really good low blow, by the way.
Yeah, really good low blow. Samoa Joe is on the ropes. Kurt Angle grabs a chair and goes to hit him with it. Joe moves out the way, so you get the old chair off the ropes to the head spot. And in a really clever way, Joe grabs his trunks and pulls him into the rear naked. And Kurt taps. And the crowd reaction is incredible. Yeah. Like, it cuts to it, and you've got, I get that it's a visceral reaction, but I hate people who throw drinks up in the air to celebrate. It's like you're around other people.
Yeah, don't be a dick.
Like, they might not want their nice tops ruined. But yeah, the crowd loved it. They're chanting for Joe, and Kurt is heel, which I forgot happened completely. But I think it makes sense.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, Samoa Joe's the homegrown guy, and Kurt Angle's the import, and so forth. So I don't remember that this double turn kind of happened. I really liked... I like this better than their first match. I thought this was better.
Agreed.
It was so good. They had, like, no one does the chair off the ropes back into the face better than Kurt Angle. He does it so good. So good.
Someone I remember was on... must have been WWE, maybe TNA. Someone did it once. It was Stevie Richards.
Oh, did it once. Yes, yes.
And knocked himself out.
Stevie Richards did it as well at... He did it at WrestleMania. He did it in the women's triple threat, and like, he hit himself with a chair, and like, JR, like, selling it great. It was like, and Stevie Richards, oh, what an idiot. it was really good. Stevie Richards was really good at it as well, but Kurt Angle, like, king, because he managed to do it in the main event and make it look good.
And he also makes it look like it's something that would happen.
Yes!
Like, it doesn't feel like you're setting up for that spot.
Yeah. Like, it's kind of, like, I would love to see that kind of done now, but I know, like, with head stuff, it's hard because, like, but at the same time, it's not like a full-on whack. It's like a little bonk, like, on the head.
Put a bonk on
it.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, that was a very odd reference. So yeah, I really like this. I didn't expect the turn. It's good. I'm looking forward to seeing what this means for Kurt Angle. Like, I didn't realize he turned heel this soon. I did not realize that. I thought we had a little bit of face Kurt Angle for a bit longer, but nope. Because he also showed that heelish tendency from last month when he initially refused the rematch as well and didn't shake Joe's hand. So, like, sort of teasing it, I guess, for a month now. And apparently, from what I was listening to on commentary on Impact, he also kind of hit Joe with an Angle Slam before, like, you know, out of nowhere kind of thing. So, he had been teasing this for a while. So, I guess if we've been watching it from week to week, we could, like, see it coming a little bit more. But it still was a very, very good main event. Very good.
Yeah, it does, if I recall right, lead to a 30-minute Iron Man match next month.
Nice.
Which, yeah, I'm not a massive fan of Iron Man matches, but if there is one that's going to make it good, it's Samoa Joe Kurt Angle.
Yeah, exactly. I think, I honestly think, and I don't know if we are going to have, if there is anything else in the history of TNA, but I think we might have seen probably the best thing that TNA have produced. In terms of a single match, a single story, because like I said at the start of this podcast, if I don't think TNA are ever going to give us a WrestleMania 17 like show where it's universally loved from top to bottom,
I just did a quick look at the best matches and cards, did a quick Google just to see. We got Kurt Angle versus Sting at Bound for Glory, which is next year. Bound for Glory 07, I think I remember actually getting a lot. Kurt Angle, Samoa Joe from Genesis 2006. Mm-hmm. So we've seen that. Daniel Styles, Samoa and Joe, Turning Point 2009. Okay, so we get another revisit of that.
Oh, okay, right.
Jeff Jarrett, Raven, we've missed out on.
Oh, no.
Kurt Angle, Samoa Joe, the Lethal Lockdown match, which I remember being really good, actually. Abyss, Rhino, Sabu, Jeff Hardy from Bound for Glory 2005. Great that's one of the peak matches and we've already had it. AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels against All Odds 2005, which we've also had. America's Most Wanted versus Triple X, the cage match with the Elite Skipper.
Oh, yeah.
Cage match, which has happened. AJ Styles versus Jerry Lynn versus Loki versus Psychosis, which has already happened.
Oh my god!
And number one, AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels, Samoa Joe, Unbreakable 2005, which has already happened.
So I think we might I think we've peaked on far as the story goes, and I don't know if we're going to get a show that is universally loved from top to bottom, but I think in terms of a story, I think we've kind of reached the apex of what TNA can do at this point. Whereas I don't think from now it goes off a cliff completely, but it's kind of, it's like a sobering thought to realize that we're only a year, 14 months, 15 months into this journey. Yeah. And I think we've seen the best thing that we're going to see.
Well, on the flip side, I've now got the mirror list of that with the worst. Let's see how many of these we still have.
Many of these are after 2014?
So AJ Styles Abyss, Destination X 2010. So we've still got that. The reverse battle royal from next year's Bound for Glory.
Yes.
We've still got that. The blindfold cage match from Lockdown next year.
That's in
year.
Four episodes
we've
time.
We've got two. We've already got two next year. Cheeks versus Frank Parker has happened, thank fuck. K-Crush versus Jeremy Sadler has happened, thank fuck. The Steel Asylum is on an episode of Impact in 2010, so we miss out on that.
Oh, the Steel Asylum, I know that match.
All of the Feast or Fired matches.
Oh, shit! I forgot about that stipulation.
The Lockbox Challenge in 2010, where fucking Tara gets fired, someone else gets a spider, someone gets naked or something.
Yeah, Daphne did a striptease.
Striptease.
Tara won back her spider, and Angelina won the belt through luck.
Oh, God. Jenna Marasco versus Charmelle.
Victory Road 2009. Yeah.
Minus 5-star match.
I am ready for that. I am so ready for that.
Oh, yeah. It makes sense. So this is number one. Sting, Jeff Hardy, Victory Road 2011.
Yeah.
Oh, God. We've got all but two still.
I should just remember that Victory Road is just going to be littered with bad stuff going forward. But yeah, so look, let's enjoy the good stuff while we've got it.
Exactly. Well, that wraps up Final Resolution. No, it doesn't. That wraps up
Turning Point is the
name
of the
show. Turning Point 2006. we end with a turning point. And that wraps up 2006 as a whole. We've been played out by a lot of the people on this show.
Who can we...
Oh, you know what?
What's that?
We have to stand to attention. You know, they won the match. It's only fair. We'll get played out by the Mexican national anthem.
I was kind of hoping for the LAX theme at least. Like...
Nah. Mexican national anthem.
That's a very odd way to get played out. Very few podcasts will get played out by a national anthem.
By the Mexican national... Exactly. We peak. So we'll be back next Tuesday talking about the first show of 2007, Final Resolution. It always annoys me that Final Resolution happens on the first pay-per-view of the year.
Yeah, would that not be the last pay-per-view of the year? I think, no.
It's the first
resolution. I'm pretty sure at one point there are two Final Resolutions in the same calendar year. There's one in January, one in December, and then one in December. Yeah, I think that happens in like 2008 or something, I want to say. But yeah, so they do change it, which is helpful.
Let's have a look. Final Resolution.
There should be 2008 and 2008-2.
Yes, Final Resolution January 2008, Final Resolution December 2008, and then... They finally fix it, and it's a December pay-per-view.
Because they realize why is the first pay-per-view of the year starting with the word final?
Yeah, and Genesis gets moved to January, so that makes sense.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. Well, Michael, would you like to plug your socials?
Yeah, sure. Why not? At Michael Farah on Instagram, at Michael Farah 92 on Twitter. Done.
You can follow me at Liam Aistur on Twitter, at Liam Aistur on Instagram. In about 10 minutes, I can get my new iPhone 11. I'll be tweeting off that about that. You can follow the brand at Develop Podcast. And as always, please remember to place your hand over your chest and embrace Mexico. Viva la Raza.